IFM 101.9 megahertz of life.
Rhodes and His Banker is the latest book by author and journalist Richard Stein. It explores the relationship between diamond and gold magnate Cecil John Rhodes and Sir Lewis Mitchell. The intertwining dual narratives of Rhodes as a rapacious entrepreneur with the Standard Bank under Mitchell tiptoeing in his way to become the biggest bank in Africa. Stein recounts how colonialism and capitalism took root. I'm delighted to have Richard as my guest now to tell me more. Richard, welcome and thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
Richard, you are also the best-selling author of a book on Jan Smuts and Afraid of Greatness and Louis Botha, A Man Apart. How do you choose your subject matter?
Well, a combination really of suggestions from my publisher and my own interests. The Smuts book I tested on Jonathan Ball, who was in favor of writing a book on Smuts because there hadn't been one for about 40 years. But he followed that up with a request to do one on Louis Botha. He requested me to do a book he'd wanted to do himself on Smuts and Churchill. I said I didn't think there was a book there, but he was right and I was wrong, and I managed to do a book on that. And then they came back to me and said, Louis Botha, would you do that? And I said, yes, I'd try that. And that went quite well. The fourth one, I then did one on the 1940s. It was sort of the final years of General Smuts in power. But it was when I was growing up I was born in the 1940s, a long time ago, and my parents, it was the milieu in which I grew up, and I wanted to have a look at the 40s because it was the years of the war. I wanted to know why my father had gone off for 6 years to fight for General Smuts in South Africa. So I thought I'd do a book on that. And then Milner was my idea, and Rhodes and His Bank, or Rhodes and Sir Lewis. Whether it's Michelle or Michel, I'm not quite sure. I've always pronounced Michelle, but let's not argue about that. And that was my choice, and I took that suggestion to Jonathan Ball, and they agreed to it.
It must be fascinating. Firstly, you said there wasn't a book written about Jan Smuts for 40 years. Is it very difficult to write new things 40 years later? Does it lapse of time make things easier or more difficult?
No, it doesn't necessarily make things more difficult, but you take a different angle. You know, all my books are written from a journalistic perspective. It's trying to interest the general reader in South African history. There are lots of weighty terms written by historians which are difficult to read. Smuts had two volumes written by Sir Keith Hancock, very good volumes, I may add. But I really wanted to retell the story of Smuts in as concise, sort of 300 pages, a space as possible, simply to encourage people to go on and read Hancock if they were interested in it. So, that was the rationale for the book.
And then the passing of history, and we can talk about Rhodes with this as well, people are viewed differently in different historical moments. And how does that impact on your writing of a book?
Well, I've always taken the view that my job is to explain actions of people, not necessarily to judge them. I mean, some people you have to judge, but by and large, I want to say why somebody did something at that time and explain the circumstances surrounding it. So I don't look through a modern perspective. I try to say, look, this is what happened at the time. It's no use pontificating about whether it's acceptable today or not. Let us look at what conditions were like at the time. And that's sort of the basis of my analysis of past politicians that have over 100 years ago.
Well, I absolutely commend you on what you do. Have you had pushback because of the people you've chosen?
Not really. I had pushed back. I've had some criticism, no doubt. Historians always tell me, well, you know, this is all written from secondary sources, and there's not much that's original there. Well, I want to tell you that there's an awful lot that historians haven't written about, which I've been able to bring to light. I mean, we haven't had any biography of Milner. We haven't had a book on the 1940s. Yes, my sources are primarily secondary, but not always. I've uncovered, I mean, I've been to Oxford, I've been to the British Library, you know, I go and look for, but at my age, I haven't got time or the resources to go and sit in archives for days. I take what's there and try and put it in a readable form, and I'm not ashamed about that or to acknowledge where I've got stuff from.
You mentioned bringing the people alive. Is it very hard to bring characters you've never met alive and place them in their context? You grew up in the 40s, but certainly with the period that you write in with Rhodes and Michelle, I'll defer to your way of pronouncing it. What was it like to try and create that and bring it alive?
Well, you know, I'm standing on the shoulders of others because there were contemporary accounts of what they were like, and I quote those. I mean, I can't tell you what Rhodes was like as a person, but Michelle can, and so I quote them, and most historians do that. Doesn't stop them from pontificating from a modern or a postmodern point of view. But we all go back to sources, and those sources are not always 100% accurate either. Some are shown later to be inaccurate, and you try to highlight that. So, I mean, it's not difficult to summarize what other people think of a particular person, and but whether I've actually got to the core of that individual, I'm never sure.
Is it fun? Is it fun going back in history and recreating a
Well, it's
period?
always been
And
interesting. Yes, it is fun. I enjoy writing, and it is fun because I tell you, if you want to know about a subject, write a book about it. It's amazing what you don't know about a subject until you have to research it. And so I've taught myself an awful lot that I didn't know previously, and in that sense, it's been very rewarding.
let's talk a little bit about Rhodes and his banker. Tell me a little bit about their personalities.
Well, they're very different. They started off Rhodes very dominant. I mean, the most prominent businessman in South Africa, ardent imperialist, man who was founder of the De Beers Mining Company, one of the world's biggest, intent on getting his way, thought he could bring the banks to heel, and he could most of the local banks, but he couldn't bring the Standard Bank to heel. The Standard Bank. He Rhodes was trying to ramp up the De Beers share price on the stock market. Michelle, who was a very proper man and a very proper banker, was having none of it. He said, he was trying to cut down on lending, dampen a boom in the diamond market, and persuaded Rhodes that his action was in the long-term interest of the industry. And what began in acrimonious circumstances ended in mutual respect for one another. Michelle became engrossed in what Rhodes was doing politically. Rhodes relied, I mean, made Michelle his personal banker in the end. And most extraordinarily of all, persuaded Michelle that who was the most successful banker and the most experienced banker in South Africa, persuaded Michelle that if he, Rhodes, should die, and that was always on the cards because of his dicky heart, Michelle should resign from the bank and become one of Rhodes' executors of his very big estate, which is exactly what Rhodes did. Michelle did rather. As soon as Rhodes died, he left. He became chairman. Michelle became chairman of De Beers for a while. He was on the board of the British South Africa Company, Rhodes's a company that controlled Rhodesia. He was a director of Rhodesian Railways. He was instrumental in founding the Rhodes Scholarships, along with Milner and Jameson. So, you know, the two very different characters, but in the end, their politics, their political views. Michelle thought that Rhodes was the only person who could actually bring Dutch and English together in South Africa, and he's probably right. And after retirement, Michelle devoted himself to preserving Rhodes's legacy and trying to bring about what Rhodes was unable to achieve in his short lifetime.
I mean, it sounds like there were particularly different people in terms of integrity. Is that correct?
Yep. Yes, they were.
And was the fact that they were and became friends for you what made it so interesting, based on the fact that they were very different people?
Yes, indeed, because you know, Michelle was aware of Rhodes's faults, but he was prepared to overlook them in the greater cause. I think his closeness to Rhodes while at the Standard Bank would not have been approved of in today's world. I think I sort of indicate that in the book. But it did intrigue me. You know, Rhodes, Michelle also was the first person to write a biography, a two-volume biography of Rhodes after Rhodes's death, the first one. It wasn't a balanced biography. It claimed to be an account of Michelle's engagement and friendship with Rhodes. And it sparked off a whole series of other biographies, which became more and more critical of Rhodes, shall I say, as the years passed. But yes, it was strange, this sort of hero worship that Michelle developed. But I can understand it, because they were both imperialists trying to do the best for the Cape Colony and South Africa at that time. That's what made it so interesting. But what was interesting is how Michelle was prepared to overlook some of the great shortcomings and the difference between Rhodes's ideology and some of the means he used to employ to get his own way. But Rhodes handled Michelle with very kid gloves, and he was always very proper in his dealings with Michelle. So, yes, that made what I thought was an interesting story, which all came to me when I wrote, updated the 150th a book of the history of the Standard Bank several years ago. And I thought then that one day I was going to try and tell the story of Michelle and Rhodes, and that's been done now.
Richard, you said earlier that historians think they know everything about a subject matter and then you start researching. What have you learned that you didn't know or that was completely different to what you expected?
Oh, gosh, Shri, that's a difficult question to answer, because in certain areas I knew very little. So I didn't know an awful lot about the actual course of the Boer War either. I mean, I knew the broad outline of it. My interest was more in the history, Western history, than South African history. But it really taught me how interesting South African history really is. And it also taught me how South Africa punched above its weight 120 years ago in international circles. And that was epitomized by Smuts, but also by Botha. And that's really the sort of where I learned that South African history is a particularly interesting subject, and one that we simply should not allow to be forgotten or denigrated by the present
I know what you mean. Yeah, the prison
milieu.
You
know exactly what yes, I mean.
I know exactly what you mean. And then can I just compare for a second? You've written on Louis Botha and you've written on Jan Smuts. And they overlap. They had an incredible friendship as well.
Yes,
and I don't know if you can compare the friendship between those two as opposed to Rhodes and Michelle.
Well, that's a difficult one. I think Smuts Botha relationship was warmer. They both Smuts sort of looked upon Botha as his mentor in a way. Botha had the personal rapport with people with Smuts which Smuts never had. I don't think Rhodes had the same sort of impact on Michelle. Rhodes didn't really change Michelle's view of what was right and proper. This idea that every man had his price and so on. Michelle never actually bought into that. So I would say the relationship between Swartz and Botha, very much off the top of my head, was closer than Michelle and Rhodes, which was more transactional and a business relationship. And eventually, as I say, became a sort of meeting of minds on the politics of trying to bring Dutch and English, Afrikaners and English together in the Cape. So it's a difficult question to answer. They were two close relationships, but they weren't identical.
I mean, it's also difficult to answer because the times were so incredibly different and the
Yes.
circumstances that they were facing were extremely difficult and different, difficult in different ways,
Yes.
in terms of
Well,
what
you see,
they.
Michelle was very supportive of Smuts and Botha. I mean, he supported union. He went to the national convention. They asked him to the national convention, which not many people know about, as because he was the leading financier of his time. And he wrote in his unpublished autobiography, which is the basis actually of this book, that he was very supportive of Smuts and Botha. He admired both of them very much. He disliked Herzog and disliked the Boers who had gone into rebellion against Smuts and Botha because Michelle said they'd taken the oaths to the British at Vereeniging and then went back on their word. And that was sort of not cricket in his in his very British view of things.
And then being a journalist, and saying that you w didn't want to write it in the kind of boring historical way, how do you bring history, how do you make history exciting?
Well, I think I see. I don't know how different people and some journalists have been very successful. What I do is I try and sort of concentrate on the main points and strip away some of the detail. People are daunted these days by a 680-page book. So I try to sort of be concise as possible. I also have the reader's interest in mind. So many of our history books are very dense to read. There's no white space, there are no paragraphs, there are no crossheads. They don't make things easy for the reader. I think because they're writing basically for other historians. I've deliberately tried to use what experience I have in journalism to make things easier for the reader. And if I say so myself, a lot of people tell me that books are easy to read, and I say, well, thank you. That's exactly what I'm trying to make them. But I certainly try not to dumb down. I simply take out the extraneous detail and try and explain things in fairly easily understandable English.
I haven't read your book, but it is a period that I'm particularly interested in South African history because so much of what we experience today actually goes back to that early founding of industry
Yes, it does.
and it's really where our roots are. And I know history does not repeat itself, but it certainly resonates. And when you look at, immigration into Johannesburg and South Africa, and you can definitely see that, we're constantly flowing as a country and everything adds up.
It does indeed. I try to bring this home in Seven Votes, which is a story of the 1940s, because I think we missed a great opportunity there to build a black middle class, which was interrupted by the war, and also interrupted when Smuts lost power. And I think a great opportunity was missed 55 years ago. Sorry, was that right? No, longer than that. So that bears out what you're saying. You know, history is a really a chronicle of missed opportunities, particularly in this country, and we certainly have missed a few.
But on that note, I'm going to leave it. Thank you very much for joining me.
Pleasure, Therese. Thank you.
That
Nice to
was
meet you.
Richard Stein, author and journalist, and talking about his book, Rhodes and His Banker.